Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the $400 billion 30-year gas deal Russia and China signed at an Asian security summit in Shanghai, where China's leader called for a new regional alliance involving China, Russia, and Iran that excludes the United States. One of the most quoted analysts on energy issues, Fidel Gate, Senior Vice President for Oil and Gas Research with Oppenheimer & Company, joins us to discuss Putin's move to diversify Russia's oil and gas markets as a hedge against possibly ramped-up sanctions from the EU and US in response to a further Russian encroachment on Ukrainian territory following Russia's annexation of Crimea. Then we'll look into the real scandal in Libya, not the absurd Republican sideshow over Benghazi, but the current chaos that is a result of the US and NATO removing the Gaddafi regime via a bombing campaign, then walking away from the rubble, declaring victory as Islamist militias moved in to fill the void in a broken country without an army or a police force. Ali Abdelatif Ahmida, the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of New England and author of The Libya We Do Not Know, joins us to discuss the role of General Khalifa Haftar and his self-declared Libyan National Army that is taking on the Islamist militias backed by U.S. allies Turkey and Qatar. Then finally, we'll assess the wisdom of the House Democrats' decision to join in the political theater of what will be the eighth investigation into the Benghazi incident, this time by a House Select Committee headed by Congressman Trey Gowdy, who has already indicated he is out to prosecute the Obama administration rather than shed new light on the tragic deaths of a U.S. ambassador and three others. Paul Waldman, a contributing editor for The American Prospect, joins us to discuss the choice of the five Democrats who will be up against seven Republicans likely to be grandstanding in an election year unless they actually come up with something that resembles evidence of White House or State Department misdeeds. And joining us now is Fidel Gate, who is the Senior Vice President for Oil and Gas Research with Oppenheimer & Company in New York City. Mr. Gate has had more than 30 years of experience in oil and gas research and has previously been with Mobil Oil and J.P. Morgan Company in New York. He is one of the most quoted analysts on energy issues and has testified before the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives about oil price speculation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Fidel Gate.
Thank you for having me.
And this deal that was signed between China and Russia that apparently is worth about $400 billion. But from what I understand, the Chinese essentially had Putin over a barrel. He was desperate to make a deal. The details of this deal aren't known, but is it your impression that China got the best of Russia?
Yes, I assume because of the situation, the main outlet for the Russian gas is Europe. And with all the political tension and fear of sanctions, he wanted to go to the safer side, and that is China. But in all honesty, it's like jumping from the frying pan into the fire. The Chinese are not going to take it easy on him. They want to drive a hard bargain, and that's exactly what happened. They drove a hard bargain, and they probably got gas at a steep discount from what the Russian gas export to Western Europe is.
But it is the fact that the deal or the amount of gas that they're going to be supplying China, 38 billion cubic meters of gas annually, which represents about a quarter of China's current annual gas consumption of nearly 150 billion cubic meters. So they already signed up for a quarter of the market, right?
Correct. Which is obviously it's longer term, it's really a win-win situation for both Russia and China. China desperately needs to have natural gas in their fuel mix because the problem, the environmental problem that they have with coal, they're going to cost them billions and billions of dollars for health and cleanup and things like that. So for them, that is a window of opportunity. They took advantage of it. And it's a long-term deal. It will require a huge amount of investment, and it will take years to really come to a full speed.
Well, apparently it's going to cost Russia $55 billion, and it's going to cost China at least $20 billion. I take it that's to build the pipelines. And so this is a situation where You've got the, what, 2018 is before the gas is going to flow? Is that your understanding?
Well, at least it will take 5 years. It depends, because this is not an easy area to build the pipeline. It has obviously not flat land. It goes through different time zones. And also, you have bad weather in most cases that will delay the construction. It's not going to go according to plan. It's likely to be behind schedule and over the original budget.
But apparently, from what we know, the plans call for building the pipeline to link China's northeast to a line that carries gas from Western Siberia to the Pacific port of Vladivostok.
Right.
And my understanding is that once Russia has established that infrastructure, it would also be able to open up its markets to Japan and South Korea.
That is the goal, the long-term goal, but to outside of China, they will need LNG, and LNG costs a lot of money. We saw what happened with Chevron LNG facility in Australia. It cost $50 billion. And I guarantee you, the Russians or the Chinese, they try to build one, it costs probably more than that. They don't have experience in LNG plans. So it is very steep price tag for these facilities. It's not going to be easy.
So again, I'm speaking with Fidel Gait, who is a senior vice president for oil and gas research with Oppenheimer & Company in New York. Mr. Gait has more than 30 years of experience in oil and gas research and has previously been with Mobil Oil and J.P. Morgan Company in New York. And he's one of the most quoted analysts on energy issues and has testified before the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives about oil price speculation. So back to Putin and the extent to which he needed this deal, and the details of it, of course, have not been disclosed, so we don't know how much he had to compromise. But what's your sense then of how he's navigating between his geopolitical ambitions in the West and the possibility of creating a backlash in the West? The Germans are sort of caught in between the U.S. and Russia to some extent, because they're dependent upon natural gas from Russia. What's your reading on the broader landscape in the west of Russia?
So far, Putin has won. So far, the West has lost. There is no common purpose or vision. There is no really effective leadership. It is every man for himself. Germany depends on Russian oil and gas. Germany is the largest importer of both. And obviously, Germany is the third largest economy in the world. And if the German economy stumbles, so would be the rest of Europe. So the European is very careful in trying to push for more sanctions. The U.S. is unhappy, but the U.S. has not really shown any leadership on this front. We just talk. We never really took any action. And but so far, Putin has won. If I keep a score, he is definitely ahead of the U.S. and European. Now, having said that, this is not the first time that Germany is being threatened by supply cutoff and disruption. It happened 3 or 4 years ago when the same situation between Russia and the Ukraine ended up. The Ukraine basically took the gas that was supposedly shipped to Germany because it's the same pipeline that carries the same gas. So Germany has prior warning and experience with potential disruption of the gas flow from Russia, and I'm very surprised that Germany has not made, say, a being diversified in terms of energy sources and not put their eggs in one basket. I'm very surprised that they have not done that or have not acted, that they are planning to do that anytime soon.
So they, as a result of the last cutoff in Ukraine, they pushed forward with the Nord Stream pipe. So they have a direct pipeline to Russia. So they're not subject to any tensions or breakdown of between Russia and Ukraine.
But in a way, they made themselves hostage to Russia, basically, because it is their supply chain. If push comes to shove and the German government, say, took a harder line against Russia, all Russia has to do is to shut off the gas and really destroy the German economy. So I'm not sure it's going to reach this point, but at least Putin carries a very big stick, and he doesn't have to use it. But, the other countries will know that he is not bashful. He can use it anytime.
Well, one of the ironies that I understand, Fat Algate, is that the huge debt that Ukraine owes Russia for the gas consumed so far, reaching into $2 to $3 billion, there's a real possibility that the West and even the U.S. may end up paying that bill. So here we are at the end of the day, our money's going to go into Putin's coffers.
Correct. Well, as I said, I really don't blame Putin. I blame the West. I blame the U.S. We've never had any energy strategy coordinated or standalone. Now the Europeans are exposed. The U.S. is basically kind of lost. We don't really know what to do to push for economic sanctions, that the Europeans are not going to support us or to do it alone, and that basically would become, ineffective. So far, Putin has won, and unfortunately is getting away with murder. So
how long would it take, though, to diversify supplies? The southern European countries like Italy could get more gas from Libya or even from Qatar, couldn't they?
Correct. But again, they have not prepared themselves for that. Mm-hmm. And the Germans have not prepared themselves. If they start and put it on an accelerated schedule, it's going to be years. It's not going to be months. It will require billions of dollars of investment, and it will take many years to do. But it can be done, and it should be done, because, again, Putin cannot be trusted. And I'm not sure the person after him can be trusted either.
Well, what I find extraordinary, Fat Algate, is that Putin has already moved one step ahead by covering his bets by having an alternative market in China.
Exactly.
And yet the West hasn't, and Europe in particular, hasn't hedged its bets by trying to look at LNG and Qatar and other countries as alternatives to their dependence on Russia.
Exactly. So he is a planner. And we are basically reactionaries. We have not been able to see through him. He basically used the Winter Olympics as a camouflage or a cover to pull off his plot, and he did. And it was a surprise to the people in the West, but now people are beginning to see it the way I see it, is that has been planned for all along.
So you're saying that he used the Sochi Winter Olympics as a cover?
Correct.
Meaning what? That he distracted?
Well, his intention that, he was spending all this time skating and scoring, goals and hockey matches and all these things, and smiling and doing all this thing, while his machinery and his military was already preparing for the invasion of Crimea and eastern Ukraine. This development did not happen overnight. It's not a spontaneous reaction by the masses. It's not. That was all part of a bigger plan. I would go back 4 or 5 years ago, actually more than 5 years ago, when George Bush was president and when Putin did the same thing with Georgia. I mean, he's trying, that was basically a preview. Ukraine is a much bigger fish to fry, and he basically had the Georgian situation to prepare him for the bigger jump, and he finally did. So Ukraine, for all practical purposes, is history. I think Russia will annex Eastern Ukraine. A lot of people are beginning to think that that is done deal. And I blame the Ukrainian government, basically, because they are very corrupt, very incompetent, and infighting. And that is an opening that Putin took advantage of.
So what is then the role, or how much is the U.S.'s fracking independence of its becoming the world's biggest producer of natural gas very quickly and becoming more and more self-sufficient? That's being touted as having all kinds of geopolitical implications and putting the United States in the catbird seat. You're telling us the opposite. So explain what the...
It's very simple. We have no energy policy. We don't have strategy. We have all the natural resources, but we really don't have the right management and the right vision to take us to the next step. What can we do with the surplus gas that we have? Nothing. We have not done anything. If we accelerated building a supply facility chain, basically LNG facilities in the U.S., to take gas to Europe, we would not have been in this situation. If we left the ban, the oil export ban, it will immediately bring down oil prices, will immediately put pressure on Putin. If we go and ask our friend in the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, all these countries, I mean, we provide them military protection and everything else, and this is the time that they show that they are reciprocating. Saudi Arabia can increase its oil export by 1 million barrels a day in 4 weeks. They can have a stopgap measure. They can basically replace big chunk of Russian oil going to Europe. And then for all practical purposes, Putin will not be able to sell his oil at fair price in the market, and he will have to accept discount, like the Iranians doing right now, because of the economic sanctions are hurting them. So they have to go to the secondary market, if you will. So that will happen, you know, if we have an energy policy, if we have a coordinated strategy. Now we know how important energy is. Putin is playing the energy card. And the U.S. is a much bigger country when it comes to energy resources, and we can play this card even better. But unfortunately, he does a better job than we do.
So when Senator McCain rather contemptuously refers to Russia as not a country but a gas station, what's he saying there?
Which is true. I mean, if you strip oil and gas out of Russia, Russia becomes a third world country. They have no export of anything whatsoever except armament, you know, arms, oil and gas. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So, but when you talk about the U.S. organizing, let's assume that, as you pointed out, that it's very likely that Putin will annex the east of Ukraine, and then the U.S. and the West will be forced to impose sanctions. They've already made the threats, but they're going to have to back up their threats. You're saying that it's going to be an empty threat unless the U.S. gets Saudi Arabia on board, and my understanding is that Saudis are kind of annoyed with the U.S. over Syria.
I mean, that is the whole thing, is that there is no clear strategy. We don't know where we stand on Libya. We don't know where we stand on Syria. We don't know where we stand on Iran. We don't know where we stand on Russia. We try to lecture, countries, and we try to threaten others, or that, but nobody really is paying any attention. I mean, Putin is still, he has his, you know, own plan, and he is basically making all the milestones that he needed to be at, concluded the gas deal in 4 or 5 weeks with China. I mean, that in itself is remarkable. And I guarantee you that all these things have been calculated, that it was not a knee-jerk reaction. He is the guy who is really dictating the tempo of the game. He is the guy who is basically in control. The West is reacting to what he does. The West tried to anticipate what Putin is going to do next. So he's keeping us guessing.
So in other words, he's playing chess and we're playing poker badly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As I said, he doesn't have to have approval from Congress or support from, you know, his political allies like our own president does. He does what he wants.
Well, Fidel Guy, I thank you very much for joining us and for your analysis. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Again, I've been speaking with Fidel Guy, who is the Senior Vice President for Oil and Gas Research with Oppenheimer & Company in New York. Mr. Guy has more than 30 years of experience in oil and gas research and has previously been with Mobil Oil and JP Morgan Company in New York. He's one of the most quoted analysts on energy issues and has testified before the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives about oil price speculation. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the real scandal in Libya, not the absurd Republican sideshow over Benghazi.